I talk often on this show about one of my heroes, James Randi, also known as the Amazing Randi. I was just with Randi out in Las Vegas for the Amazing Meeting, the fifth annual event. I have attended four of them where skeptics from all over the country get together and have a wonderful time and talk about all sorts of things. And one of the major topics of conversation there was what we were discussing 1 week ago today on this show, which was the absolute failure of TV psychics Sylvia Brown and James Von Prague in their predictions years ago about what had happened to Sean Hornbeck. Sylvia Brown, completely wrong. Mm-hmm. She, A, had said that Sean Hornbeck was dead. B, that his body would be found somewhere near some jagged boulders. James Von Prague had said that his body would be found in a rail yard and that he'd been killed by a man who worked in that rail yard. Very, very close. Railroad, pizza place. Very, very close.
Alive, dead.
Alive,
yeah.
Dead. Very, yeah. Very, yeah. Close.
Come on, it's only one or the other.
Completely wrong on every count.
One in two chance.
If you're a listener of this show or a follower of Randy's work, you are not surprised by that at all. And then Friday night, while we were at the Amazing Meeting, Randi got a call from the people at CNN and did a very nice shot on Anderson Cooper's CNN show, talking about all of these phenomena. While we were there that weekend, I said, you know, it's been a while. Why don't you come back on my show, and we'll talk about it a little bit as well. So here he is, James the Amazing Randi. How are you?
You didn't talk about the time you twisted my arm in the hall.
No, I don't talk about that sort of thing.
Okay, all right. By the way, James Von Prague wasn't so far off with this Sean kid, you know, because after all, he said that he was murdered by a railroad worker, and Sean once saw a train.
And that's actually, you know, we're joking about that, but that's the sort of thing that in many parts of that so-called psychic world, they would count that as a hit.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Anything that relates to it whatsoever, even a bicycle, because a bicycle has wheels too, you know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The thing that shocked me, and I didn't know until the Anderson Cooper show on Friday night, was this thing about Sylvia after the Acres were on the Sylvia Brown appearance on the Montel show back in 2003, she then said, I will do a private consultation with you for $700.
Oh, my.
This is not uncommon, is it?
And that's over the telephone, too, you know, Paul. She does $700 for a 20-minute session on the telephone, most of which is confined to telling you the names of your guardian angels. You wouldn't want to miss that. And the names that you had as a former princess in Nivana, or wherever, you know, it's always a romantic story, but she never answers the questions that you ask, you know, like, where is the will? Grandma, where is the will? Well, Grandma's spirit doesn't tell you that. She says, goodbye, I love you.
I forgive you.
You know, she doesn't say it's behind the encyclopedia on the second shelf. No, nothing.
And this is the problem that we've always had with these people, is the complete lack of accountability. Since that episode, Sylvia has not spoken out about this. I told you this story last week at the meeting, but I got an email last Wednesday morning. We talked about Sylvia's failure on Monday's show here last week on KMOX. Wednesday morning, I'm at home working, getting ready for Wednesday's show, and I get an email from a listener who says, hey, Paul, I was flicking around on TV just now, and I saw that Sylvia is on Montel again. I'm going to watch and see if she apologizes for being so wrong about Sean Hornbeck. And, of course, she didn't do any of that for two reasons. One, the show was probably taped a month or two in advance.
Yes, it was.
And secondly, she can never apologize, can she?
No, she can't apologize enough, even if she tries. You know, the thing that I never hear about Sylvia, we're hearing stories now that she's not well. And I'm getting the name, I'm getting Marlboro. Winston, I'm getting.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about the million-dollar challenge, because it goes right along with this. This is something that Randi started. When was the first time you walked around with the $1,000 check in your pocket?
Oh, that's hard to remember now. It's been at least 30 years or so that I've walked around with that check, but my fortunes got better, and I was soon offering $10,000. And on a TV program, let me see, that was on Lexington Broadcasting some years ago. It was syndicated. They offered $100,000, although that gave the conniptions to the, you have no idea how nervous the producers were, because they said, oh, my goodness, somebody may win it. And I said, really, there's not much chance. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah.
And then it went up to $1 million when a rather wealthy gentleman, naturally wealthy, I guess you figured that out for yourself, offered us $1 million in bonds, and we deposited that with Goldman Sachs up in New York. And it's sitting there as a prize, as a potential prize, for anyone who can prove any psychic powers.
Psychic or paranormal powers, for
that
matter.
They don't have to prove it to us. They have to prove it to an independent party that we both agree on.
Right. Before we go on with this, I don't know if I ever told you about the story my wife and I had a fight about regarding this. Did I tell you that story?
No.
It might have been in the late 80s. Before you actually got the benefactor to put up the money, you asked a bunch of us by email if we would be willing to put up a pledge.
Yeah, oh yes, yes.
And it would be in denominations of $1,000. Yeah. And it would be if somebody did ever win this challenge and prove psychic or paranormal ability, a bunch of us who were your supporters would pledge whatever amount of money we could so that we would pay it off, because you didn't have the money. But if we would all put up $1,000 or $5,000 or whatever it was, then we would become responsible for that debt were it ever to be incurred. Here's the fight we had. I said to my wife, well, I'm going to write to Randy and say, we're good for $5,000. And you sent us the paperwork, and I filled it out. And she said, $5,000? You sure that's enough? And I said, you know what? Let's make it $10,000. And she said, wait a second. I don't know if we can afford $10,000. And I said, hey, we can put $100,000 on here. No one's ever going to win this money. Not because Randy doesn't want to give it away, but because there's no such thing as psychic or paranormal ability. This is lock money. Trust me. I can tell you, as a person who has gambled a few times, this money is a lock. We had about a 20-minute fight about it, Randy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I brought domestic disharmony to you. I'm sorry.
but that's okay. I finally made it $10,000. So we were in for that for a few years, and then you found a guy who had the real money and probably had a big argument with his wife. but anyway, for all these years now, you've been offering this money for people who can prove that, and they had to go through preliminary tests, and you and the other people at the James Randi Educational Foundation offices in Fort Lauderdale have been swamped by people with all sorts of crazy claims, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, that's the problem, Paul. We've, as I announced at the amazing meeting out in Las Vegas, we're making substantial changes in the challenge now. As of April the 1st, the conditions are going to change rather radically, because the applications, almost all of them that we get, are for really nutty things. I can fly by flapping my arms.
Yep.
I can tell you something about yourself. Yes. Because I just punched you in the mouth. You know, you can tell me something about myself. Ridiculous claims. People don't know how to pose the claims, even. They like to say things, I get impressions. Okay, about what, you know? And then we have to go on for months and months of sending letters and emails back and forth until they finally drop out. So we decided to do away with all that garbage, all the amateurs out there who can't speak straight. And we asked them, it just proved two things. First of all, you have to have a media presence, and you have to have an academic who will support you. Now, with Sylvia Brown, that's no problem. She has a media presence, and she's got all kinds of academics out there who think that she's the real thing, believe it or not. I don't know where they teach only veterinary surgery or something on puppy dogs. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the point is, we want some qualifications from people before they start. I don't want the granddaddy down the street there who thinks he can paint like Gauguin or something. You know, that's not really a supernatural or a paranormal claim, and I don't want to beat around the bush with these people. I'm wasting my time and the time of my staff.
Right. So these people who are going to apply beginning April 1st, and until then the current protocol stays in place, but beginning April 1st, it will have to be somebody who is at least proven their ability to somebody else. It could be a member of the media, or I guess a local academic would qualify.
Sure, of course.
Okay, so they have to go through that stage first, and then there would be the next stage, which is coming to you and saying, here's tape of me doing it, here's tape of me on TV, they're saying me do it, here's a local academic saying I could do it, and then they would go on and you would establish some easy protocol, because by then you really know what it is they're claiming, right?
Exactly, and the protocol can be arrived at very easily. And again, I stress, we don't do the test. Now, if they want us to do the test, sure. But we don't do the test. The formal test certainly would not be done by us. It would be done by other people, academics with proper standing who have expertise in those particular subjects, no matter what it is.
I think this is a great way to go, because as you said, you and your staff just don't have time to go running around the world checking out every claim by every person who comes up with some wacko idea. I think I made the cup move on the counter today. Do I get my $1 million?
No, right. You bumped the table.
And hey, I'm 78 now, Paul, you know, and I got to hurry.
Now, let's talk about the other part of what is going to be the new efforts on the James Randi Educational Foundation's behalf, which are being more proactive in going after the Sylvia Browns of the world.
Yep, and we, I'll just tip you off to this. I'm going to announce it pretty soon, not just yet, but we got a substantial offer from a certain source that we may be funded in this direction, that we will have a legal staff, a considerably much larger legal staff than we have now. We have one lawyer in Miami who does pro bono work for us, and we're very happy and very satisfied with his efforts. But now he's going to have a bit of a staff that can actually follow through on this, where we name people like Jane von Prague and Sylvia Brown and John Edward, of course, and Uri Geller. Remember him?
Yeah, we're going to talk about him in a minute.
Okay, well, we're going to offer these people the prize, and we'll offer them, you know, three or four at a time. We'll give them 6 months. To respond. If they don't respond, we simply say, we offered you the money, you chickened out, you won't do it, go away, I don't want to hear your name again.
And the idea is to shame them.
Well, I don't think they can be shamed. Hey, Sylvia Brown isn't embarrassed over the boo-boo that she, I mean, this recent boo-boo, she's had so many before.
Yeah.
You know, one woman whose daughter went missing, a little tiny girl went missing, Sylvia said that she had been sold into white slavery in Japan.
Mm.
And it turned out that the little girl had died within hours of having been kidnapped. She was murdered. And this woman is totally grieved whether the girl's dead or not. She's taken away to Japan in white slavery. Come on.
You know, this goes to the heart of something that I mentioned to you many times before, which is that I wish we could get the people on the prosecutorial side of this country to go after these people, like the old bunco squads used to, because this is nothing more than fraud, and there are all sorts of lawsuits that do go after people for causing and inflicting emotional distress.
That's right.
Why can't we do that with Sylvia Brown and these others? Because they are taking people at their most emotionally vulnerable and turning them into victims of a con.
You would have to have some sort of politician someplace with integrity. Silly me. And have that person come forward and say, I'm going to do something about this. Now, the late Claude Pepper, he was a perfect example of a guy who would do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
We don't have Claude Pepper any longer.
We
need someone like that.
Can you and we, the other members of the JREF, go after these people on a civil basis? Or can their victims go after them on a civil basis?
That's what we're investigating right now. We want to try to get a class action suit going in certain directions against certain specific psyche.
That's great. I hope that this is the year when, as you said at TAM the other day, the amazing meeting, rather than playing defense, we can play offense.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I only have a few minutes left here, but talk about the interesting news about Uri Geller. And for people who aren't familiar with him, he's a guy who's been around for a couple of decades now, doing his spoon-bending, compass-turning, key-twisting effects on TV. And he's gotten himself quite a bit of acclaim. You and Geller were involved in a little legal incident several years ago where you kind of explained to the world that he was doing nothing more than magic tricks and there was nothing paranormal about it. And he's a very litigious man and went after you big time and really, really put a hurt on you financially because of that. But you have long since recovered from that. And Geller has virtually no name in the United States anymore, but he's still popular elsewhere, isn't he?
Oh, yes. In the UK, in the United Kingdom, he's very, very popular. Of course, he lives there. But he's more or less a clown, though, Paul. They call him up on every... You find a two-headed baby, call Uri Geller. See what he thinks about it, you know?
Yeah.
He is sort of a clown. He's an object of derision. But now he's really bitten off more than he can chew. Because he went off to Israel and he started a TV series called Uri Geller and His Successor. And he got a bunch of amateur magicians in there to try to do spoon bending and various other things. And, of course, they all did it badly, and that made Geller look better, you see.
This is a reality show in which they're supposedly looking for his heir?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, right. I believe that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in any case, they caught him doing the old compass trick. Now, the guy only has about six tricks he does, Paul. You know, it's very, very small repertoire. And one of the tricks that he does is the old compass trick. Now, we used to do this in summer camp up in Canada. When I was a kid, I did this in summer camp, and we did it all the, we all knew how to do it. You simply conceal a magnet in your fist or in your tongue, under your tongue, or in your collar or so, anything like that. And as you go close to the compass, lo and behold, it moves. And that used to spook out the young kids until they found out how it was done. Then they'd do it on the other kids.
Pretty simple. Pretty simple. Getting a compass to turn when there's a magnet nearby.
Yeah, and what he did was, you saw him in the video of the program. It was live too. Could you believe it? You actually see him plugging something onto his left thumb, a thing like a thimble, which has a magnet in it. And he's moving his hand back and forth. The newspapers over in Israel were full of it. They all accused him of doing this sort of thing, and a member of parliament put forth a motion in front of the Knesset saying that they wanted to investigate Uri Geller for bringing shame to the country of Israel. Can you believe that?
I love that. I love that. Are they thinking about banning him from the country?
Well, I don't know. Where would he go? I don't want him. Another thing, Paul, and I think this is very important, and I think we should spend a minute or two, if we have a minute or two,
we do,
on Montel Williams. Now, Montel Williams is a very intelligent guy.
Yeah.
He's well-educated, well-experienced, a man of the world. He knows what's going on. Why is he giving all this airtime to people like Sylvia Brown? He knows what she's doing, but he just doesn't care. And I just heard this morning from the grapevine that he is preparing an hour-long special, TV special, on the work of Sylvia Brown, which I'm sure is going to try to make her look as good as possible.
Unbelievable!
It is unbelievable. Now, this is a hidden agenda, which I think is now no longer hidden. The point is, he knows better, Paul, but he just doesn't give a damn.
It's all about the bottom line. It's all about the ratings. Sylvia is good for ratings. All of these liars and scoundrels and thieves and con artists do, unfortunately, bring in ratings because there are people in America who still do fall for it. You think that's all that he cares about?
I think so, because he can't be fooled. He's not fooled by this nonsense. He knows it's garbage, and he knows the method she's using, because every time she makes a boo-boo, and she makes them very frequently, he jumps in immediately to offer excuses to try to save her.
As he did last year when she made that horrible mistake about the miners.
That's right.
In West Virginia.
That's right. And here's Montel making excuses for her.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's time he get called out for that. And everybody else, you know, there are bad radio hosts in America who think, hey, we're going to have our psychic on. Let's have Terry the psychic on, and she'll tell people about their lives. And, you know, I can understand doing magic and tricks for entertainment. You did it for a living. Our friends Penn and Teller and Jamie Ian Swiss and Lance Burton and Matt King and all these people, they all do that for a living. But they don't claim that they're doing paranormal things. They don't claim that they are going to tell people secrets of their own lives to save them and point them in the right direction. That's what that line is, that where they cross over to evil. And, you know, one of the people who you had performing for us last week was a terrific mentalist by the name of Banachek.
Oh, yes.
His show last Thursday night, it was phenomenal. It's one of the best mentalism shows I've ever seen.
Oh, well, I think it's the best you're ever going to see.
But while I was sitting there watching him, and Randy, all I could think was how easy it is for evil people to cross over the line doing exactly what Banachek does, but
exactly,
instead of saying, I'm doing this as a trick, to say, I'm doing this because God is telling me this about
mm-hmm.
you. The exact same tricks that he's doing, the exact same magic that he does, can be perverted in such a way that it actually does cause harm. And those people and those who support it, like Montel Williams, absolutely need to be held responsible.
Not only that, you see, the bottom line here, I think you can put it in one sentence, Paul. You don't do anything in your profession as a magician to change people's basic philosophy.
I think
that's what these people are doing, the Sylvia Browns and the John Edwards and the rest of them. They are changing people's basic philosophy. They're changing their lives for the worse. They're telling them nonsense and getting them to believe it.
If you'd like to find out more about the Million Dollar Psychic Challenge and the James Randi Educational Foundation, I encourage you to check out the website, www.randi.org. And, you know, next year we're going to be moving the amazing meeting to June. taking place once again in Las Vegas after a lot of cold winters the last few years. We decided to go for a little warmth in June, and I would invite you to join us there next year because it is a phenomenal event and certainly worthy of your support. And as always, Randy, as I mentioned, I have enormous respect for you, and I'm proud to call you a friend.
Well, Paul, you're certainly my friend, and it was a joy to see you there. I saw you having a good time there. And, folks, he stayed away from the machines. I assure you.
I was too busy in the poker room. You know me.
Watching him.
Thanks, Randy. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Paul.
James the Amazing Randy. James Randy Educational Foundation in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.